Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sunup. The Daily Sunup podcast is a conversation with the Colorado Sun. See our trust indicators at coloradosun.com/ethics. It's Thursday, May 30th. Today, the Temperature newsletter reporters Michael Booth and John Ingold talk about preserving million-dollar views from the Uncompahgre Valley and how Colorado hospitals are trying to squeeze the last federal dollars for Medicaid. Before we continue, the Colorado Sun is partnering with multiple news outlets across the state to understand what is driving Coloradans this election year. What issues do you care about most as we head into the 2024 election? Let us know by filling out our survey at coloradosun.com/votervoices. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. Alan True, born in Colorado Springs on this day in 1881, became a renowned artist through his commissions in Colorado and beyond. Growing up in the western U.S. and Mexico, he developed a deep love for the region's landscapes and cultures. After graduating from Manual High School and studying art at the University of Denver, he worked with East Coast illustrators before returning to the Centennial State. True painted murals for homes, libraries, and theaters, securing major commissions like the Wyoming State Capitol and Missouri State House. Despite the Great Depression, he restored art in Central City and created murals for the Colorado State Capitol. Before we continue, join the Colorado Sun on June 25th as Equity reporter Tatiana Flowers speaks with a panel about how they see mental illness falling through the cracks, what some solutions are or ways to address the issues, and more. The event is free and virtual. RSVP today at coloradosun.com/events. Next, our feature story.
Hi, everyone. Happy Thursday. Welcome to another one of our reporter chats here on the Daily Sunup. I am John Ingold. I'm the healthcare reporter here at the Sun. And on Thursdays, I'm always joined by my colleague, Michael Booth, who covers climate and environment. So, hey, Mike.
John, good to be here.
So we know you've heard about this a lot from other places, probably, but we just want to do one more plug for you to come on out to Sunfest this year. It's our annual Ideas Festival that will be held on September 27th at the University of Denver. It's in person, so you actually get to get out and see human beings and interact with other fellow Colorado nerds like us, all our other readers and listeners. And you can buy tickets right now for it if you go to coloradosun.com/sunfest. Last year's was a lot of fun. This year's should be a lot of fun as well.
So, and you can see the beautiful University of Denver campus with our partners and stop by the school pioneer shop and buy your hockey championship gear and your lacrosse gear and anything else you want to.
And of course, we'll have Colorado Sun swag as well.
Absolutely.
So, Mike, you wrote about this week in our newsletter in The Temperature. You wrote about how, you know, turning to summer, it's always a good time to start getting out and exploring the state, which you've done a little bit. I know I'm looking forward to doing some this summer. But let's explore the state away from our base here in the Denver metro area, and let's go to the Western Slope and some innovative land preservation ideas that are gaining some momentum out there.
Yes, sometimes people, the publicists who work on things around Colorado, are smart enough to include a glorious photograph of the Colorado landscape in the news releases that they send us along with a text. And in this case, there was an absolutely stunning shot of some farmland near Olathe and in the Uncompahgre Valley around Montrose out in western Colorado. And the pitch was that there was going to be some welcome preservation of a few hundred acres of longtime agricultural land. The Anderson family has been farming this area for four generations. That part of Colorado produces an amazing variety of everything from melons to pinto beans to alfalfa to the famous Olathe corn that we get at the right moment in the summer in the grocery stores, and everything else you can imagine from the agricultural food that sits on our plate and comes to our grocery stores. So they have a key role in the agricultural economy, and also they are a welcome place for people to build second homes or telecommute from once they've built their house there. And so as farmer Scott Anderson mentioned, he is out there in his fields seeing subdivisions going up all around him and seeing houses off in the distance and seeing them creep in and not wanting the housing to overwhelm what's both agricultural land and just amazing views of the ranges out there and the mountains and the rivers. So this deal will create a conservation easement on that farm property, meaning that in perpetuity, it will remain open agricultural space and the water rights stay with that land, which are always important in Colorado. And in exchange, the family gets a tax credit from the state of Colorado as part of the Colorado Tax Credit Conservation Easement Programs that allows them to have some income from the property and guarantee that they can stay there instead of having to sell out to developers. So the Colorado Western Land Trust are the people who helped arrange it and are helping promote it.
So let's talk about these conservation easement tax credits. Colorado has a long history with them, and they haven't always been on the up and up. So what's changed with them over the years?
Yes, there's been periodic bad or disturbing news about these tax credits in Colorado, especially in the early 2000s. There were different rules in place. It was kind of like the Wild West in terms of what land you thought could qualify, and getting appraisals that would say that a dry parcel of land, I mean, not to pick on the Eastern Plains, but that's where some of the most egregious cases happened, that really wasn't probably good for much more than a gravel pit or some grazing, was somehow going to be developed in the future into a hotel or a golf course or something lucrative outside of a town. And therefore, if you donated as a conservation easement, you should get millions of dollars back from the state for putting away, giving up the potential to develop it. And it became a very unscrupulous set of tax credits for years and years. And the state just finally started investigating them and said, no, we're not doing that. Those that you have already filed are against our rules and crazy, and we're not going to pay out those tax credits. And they fought both in court and at the legislature, where they convinced legislators to try to bring them some compensation for the ones that were canceled. It would have been more than $100 million of taxpayer, potential taxpayer money that would be given up for those easements. And they could never pass it because it was just too controversial. Once we and others started uncovering and shedding light on these deals for what were really not that much great land and something that wasn't a benefit to state taxpayers, certain legislatures would back away and say, we can't support that. So they never got that compensation. Meanwhile, they rewrote the tax credit program to be more above board, make sure the appraisals were for land that was actually valuable for conservation purposes, make sure that the revenue department had more controls over what would get paid out and why it would get paid out, and more a cap on how much could be set aside from state revenues each year, so that to make sure that it wasn't just an unlimited thing and that the programs, the land that did get funded through state taxpayers giving up this money would be worthwhile. And so the people who are engaged in this particular one in the Uncompahgre Valley are saying this is an example on the good side. They've been thoroughly, meticulously reviewed by state and local officials. It's land that everybody can agree, just looking at the pictures, that is worth setting aside and has open space, as open agricultural land, and that it does support a thriving agricultural economy out there. So hope that this represents a good turn in the program, and as other people who are thinking about doing conservation easements will look at this and realize that it can be an important part of Colorado's open space future.
Yeah, kind of a win-win for everybody.
Yeah. John, this week, as we turn toward the health side of the ledger on the temperature, you have been reporting again about the state arrangement where they get more money that hospitals need out of the Medicaid program under federal arrangement that allows them to make some very complicated, some very lucrative math, legal math that gets them hundreds of millions of dollars. And there have been some recent developments on that program. Tell us what's the latest.
Yeah, so this was a story I started hearing about from folks who were really kind of up in arms about things that were going on. There was sort of a big contentious fight happening, and I couldn't quite figure out why. And it requires you to dive into one of the most complicated areas of healthcare policy that our state engages in, which is this this mechanism that they refer to as the CHASE fee, or the hospital provider fee. It's basically a way for the state to sort of draw down a whole bunch of money from the federal government that can then be redistributed to hospitals to help them cover the cost of providing Medicaid services. And so the way it works is that the hospitals pay a fee up front. This is the CHASE fee, the Colorado Healthcare Affordability and Sustainability Enterprise fee. And they pay it into this big pot that totals something like $1.2 billion every year. And then that money then sort of acts as like a magnet that pulls down this federal funding, and it grows the pot even more to something like $1.7 billion. And then that money all gets redistributed back to the hospitals through a system that favors hospitals that care for more Medicaid patients. And ultimately, hospitals then end up netting about $500 million a year as a result of this. Some hospitals end up being net payers into the system if they don't treat very many Medicaid patients. Some end up receiving more money back than they put in, quite a bit more back than they put in. But in general, it ends up being a net win for hospitals across the state. And so I was trying to figure out, well, why is this being controversial? And it has to do with how the state actually calculates how much money is available for them to pull down from the federal government. And essentially, hospitals are saying the state has not been going for the maximum amount of money it possibly could from the feds. And the Colorado Hospital Association and its members were asking the state to try to draw down 100% of the available funding. But this ended up kicking up quite a bit of controversy among some other folks involved in the system.
As you memorably put it, you said the complications of this make it seem like a plot from a low-grossing installment of one of the Ocean's franchises. And we should remind people, if they're worried about that analogy, that it's perfectly legal. It's actually created by the federal and state governments in order to make sure that there's more compensation for people who are treating Medicaid patients. But what is the rub in terms of the state? I understand it from your piece that the state is worried. The last thing they want to do is have to pay money back to the federal government. That the accusation would be that somehow they drew down too much money and they're going to have to cut a check back to the federal government. I want to avoid that. Apparently, other folks are saying, no, we're not anywhere close to that limit.
Yeah. So again, this thing is just whole really, really complicated. And as you mentioned, it has this whole air of sounding like it's just crazy enough to work. Like it's a team of ragtag players getting together and trying to pull off some crazy kind of Robin Hood heist. But it actually is a mechanism created by the federal government to make up for the fact that Medicaid generally doesn't pay hospitals what it costs for them to provide medical services. You go in, if you're on Medicaid, you go in and you get a colonoscopy, and Medicaid will pay that hospital 70 cents on the dollar for what it costs to provide that colonoscopy, or 80 cents on the dollar, something in that range. So the federal government needed a way to figure out how to additionally reimburse hospitals for the care they provide to Medicaid. And that's how they created this sort of so-called supplemental payment system. But the accounting and trying to figure out, as you mentioned, how much the state is actually eligible to pull down gets really complicated. And the state is concerned that, hey, if we go over, then we're going to end up having to pay back money to the federal government, or we could. Now, the Hospital Association would say that's not actually the way this works. It's sort of the feds sign off on your math when they give you the cash, so that there isn't that concern. And ultimately, when you hear about the numbers here, it seems kind of trivial because the state is already pulling down 97.2% around on average of the available funding that they think they're eligible to pull down. So they're leaving a 2.8% cushion there in the numbers, just in case they've missed the math and they need to potentially pay some money back. But when you think, again, we're talking billions of dollars here, when you think of the scope of this, that actually, to bump that up to a full 100%, that would net hospitals in Colorado an additional $50 million. So it's not a trivial amount that could get distributed around to hospitals, especially at a time when some of them are really hurting. Now,
that's basketball player and quarterback money. I mean, that's real money.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can get one really good starting NFL quarterback for that. Not that the Broncos have that, but, you know, maybe. Yeah. Maybe in the future.
Solid rookie salaries.
The state says they're currently undergoing sort of a routine audit from the federal government to determine whether the math is actually being done correctly here. So they're kind of concerned about making too many changes to it right now without having the results of that. It's also that, you know, if you've been following along, there ends up being a lot of mistrust between some of the players in this health policy space of hospital funding and hospital finance, because you have folks on one side who think the hospitals are sort of taking advantage of the mechanisms and are hoarding profits. And you have the hospitals feeling like they're being asked by lawmakers or state officials to do things that are financially unreasonable for them to do. And so one thing that did happen here is that some of the folks who are involved, like say the Colorado Consumer Health Initiative, which is a consumer advocacy organization that lobbies at the Capitol and often is trying to lobby for greater controls over hospital profitability or things like that. They feel like some of this discussion that the hospitals were doing was happening in private instead of happening in public. And the Chase Enterprise is a public body. It has a board that oversees it, that has public meetings. And they felt like this should have been happening out in the open. And so there was kind of this sense that came along with the hospital association asking for this additional money that people were sort of wondering, like, well, wait, what are you up to here? What are you trying to pull? But ultimately, it does seem like we've reached a resolution where the state has decided to get through this audit it's going through now. And if things are all square away there, they will look to push up to now like 99% of the available funding that they can draw down. So getting closer to that 100% amount, still leaving a little cushion in place, but potentially meaning more money for hospitals. So it seems like there's a meeting next week to sort of hash this out, but it seems like we maybe have a truce in this battle.
Well, obviously, open meetings and open records are a sore subject for us as journalists, especially this year when a Democratic-controlled state legislature passed some things that were not great for open access and open meetings and open information. So understand where the consumer initiative is coming from and wanting these meetings to be out there in the open. Will you be able to follow up on the next stage of it? And will they hold that out in the open where we can watch?
They will. Yeah, absolutely. The meeting is on Monday and anybody can watch it. You can Google the Colorado Healthcare Affordability and Sustainability Enterprise or the Chase Board. And there's information on that page for the June 3rd, 2024 meeting.
Great. Okay. And John has the links in our newsletter. And the newsletter is also, if you don't get it in the mail, embedded on our website under our premium newsletters. And we hope that if you're not already a member, that you might sign up and get access to all of our past great newsletters. And you're a hero if you read the current newsletters or any of the past newsletters all the way through. So appreciate everybody listening on that today. John, thanks for reporting on that.
Yeah, Mike, thank you.
And as John mentioned, keep signing up for Sunfest and keep an eye out for our events page, which is always has something coming up in the coming weeks. We have a June event on mental health that we hope you'll join our reporters for and some great outside experts. So thanks for everybody. Have a great weekend.
You can read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Colorado air regulators are set to begin testing in the state's oil fields to tally how much methane the industry's wells, tanks, and pipelines are spewing into the air. The measurements are part of the first-in-the-nation methane intensity rule aimed at helping meet the state's legal obligation to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from 2005 levels by 26% in 2025, 50% by 2030, and 90% by 2050. This will be the first time regulators tried to add up all the methane emissions the industry is generating. A former lawyer for Donald Trump who pleaded guilty last year to a felony charge in Georgia for trying to overturn the presidential election results in that state is barred from practicing law in Colorado for 3 years. Jenna Ellis agreed to a settlement with Colorado's Office of Attorney Regulation Counsel that was approved by a judge Tuesday. To practice law here again, she must file a petition asking to have her license reinstated at the end of the 3-year suspension. Governor Jared Polis has signed a new law allowing a state bonding authority to purchase the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, a step toward preserving an attraction that inspired Stephen King's The Shining. The law clears the Colorado Educational and Cultural Facilities Authority to create a nonprofit company to manage the property and raise revenue for schools and art facilities. The state next plans to issue up to $450 million in bonds to finance the construction of a new film center at the hotel. Once the bonds are repaid, the authority will own the hotel and film center. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Now, a quick message from our team.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. My name is Jason Blevins. I'm the outdoors writer here at the Colorado Sun, co-founder of the Colorado Sun. I'm on the weekly podcast with David Krause every Monday. And I also write a weekly newsletter. Comes out every Thursday. It's called The Outsider. Take a look at each issue has sort of early glimpses of stories. I got stuff on housing, high country business, high country culture, public lands, public land managers, kind of just about anything kind of interesting and happening on the Western Slope. Try to get into it. Ski industry stuff. I invite you to come check it out. It's one of the many newsletters we have at the Colorado Sun. Head to coloradosun.com/join and become a member and support the Colorado Sun. Appreciate you guys listening. Thanks.